Hello, Bulls Nation. Welcome to another episode of the Rebuildable Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Gentile, and I'm really excited about today's show because we're having on Matt Peck from Locked On Bulls and Bulls Outsiders on NBC Sports Chicago. Well, there's two reasons I'm really excited about this one. First off, Matt has really informed opinions that you hear on Locked On Bulls and Bulls Outsiders, and I think that kind of nuance is perfect for this platform where he can present a long-term rebuilding plan from start to finish. But probably the biggest reason I'm excited is this is going to be the second Bulls Outsider that I'm having on the show. The first one we had on was John Sabine, of course, episode 3, when he laid out his rebuilding plan, and Matt today will be the second. We're working on getting the third. Big Dave Watson, I'm trying to work out some dates with him now, and hopefully I'll have some more information on that soon. But on this episode, you're going to hear Matt lay out his rebuilding plan. Before we get to that, I asked him about his experience this past season on Bulls Outsiders, and here's what he had to say.
Yeah, I mean, it was really, well, first of all, thanks for having me, Matt. I've been keeping track of what you've been doing once you started Rebuildable, and it's a really cool idea. There's a lot of Bulls podcasts out there. Jordan and I refer to it as the Bulls Pod Fam, and everybody kind of has their own style and everything, but this is a pretty unique angle that you've taken, and I've really enjoyed all the various guests you've had on so far, and you're doing a great job, so keep it up. But to the question about Outsiders, yeah, it's really crazy. Jordan and I had been doing Locked On Bulls for, a little over a year when last summer we were approached by Kevin Anderson, the executive producer at NBC Sports Chicago, who said, we have this idea for a show. It actually is a show that had started in other NBC local markets. It started with the Warriors, who doesn't want more Warriors content these days? Certainly people in the Bay Area are going crazy for him. So the Blazers followed suit. And so the Blazers and Warriors Outsiders have been going on for a couple of years and had been pretty well received. And then simultaneously to NBC Sports Chicago launching Bulls Outsiders, they also launched Outsiders shows in Philly and in Washington. So now there's also Sixers and Wizards Outsiders. But as far as the show in Chicago, they just reached out to a number of people who were, notable follows and personalities among Bulls Twitter, blogs, podcasts, things of that nature, and asked people who were interested to send them essentially like an audition tape giving their take on the Jabari Parker signing, which had just happened, earlier that summer. And then from there, they narrowed the field down and brought a handful of us in for auditions and then went through a couple of rounds of auditions and a final callback. And they landed on myself and my amazing co-stars, John Sabine and Big Dave Watson.
Yeah, I had John Sabine on. He was our third guest. And one of the things that I said to him was that it's amazing the chemistry the three of you had. How quickly did it take for that to come together for you guys?
It is kind of crazy. In fact, a lot of people at NBC, when they had, they had a few conversations with us when they first brought us in and offered us the gig, were saying that they couldn't believe that the three of us didn't know each other before coming into those auditions. And it really was just about the chemistry when they put the three of us on camera together a couple of times during the callbacks. And certainly some of it was just a personality crossover for all three of us. Like, John and Dave bonded over their mutual fandom of professional wrestling, WWE, which is like something that I care nothing about. I've been kind of occasionally humoring them, and I've watched a couple of like the biggest pro wrestling events that have happened since I've gotten to know them, just to prove that I'm open to new things and trying new things. But so they bonded really quickly over that. Dave and I bonded over the fact that we're both lifelong Bulls fans, die hard through and through, whereas John's kind of a Chicago transplant, originally a Mavs fan and has adopted the Bulls as his second team. But Big Dave and I talk about watching epic MJ games in our childhood, and we bonded over that. And then kind of as a weird other aside, John and I bonded over the fact that both of us have a background in performance and comedy, because before I got into sports broadcasting and sports media, my major in college was drama. And before getting into sports media, I lived in Chicago, Los Angeles, and New York as a professional actor. So John and I had a lot of similarities in that regard. So it was like, you know, just lighting a match of instantaneous chemistry, because there was so much crossover of the things that we loved and appreciated, not just with the Bulls and the NBA, but other interests as well.
That makes a lot of sense. I didn't know that about your background. I was trying to do some research ahead of time here, and I didn't know that. But it kind of makes sense, because the way that you've been able to steer the discussion, I think there has to be an element of performance attached to that.
Yeah, there's certainly an element to it. You know, it's not quite the same level of adrenaline you get performing in front of a live audience, which, you know, I still think back on fondly, and I miss doing that sometimes. But, you know, staring straight into a camera with a red light on certainly like offers some of that same adrenaline. But it's just kind of a thing that has always come naturally to me. And I think that certainly as far as what NBC was looking for, they wanted people who were somewhere between people that actually are, you know, employed by some media company on a daily basis to cover the team. You know, they didn't want beat writers. They wanted this to be a fan, you know, a fan-centric show by the fans for the fans. And there was some crossover that existed there for not only myself, but Big Dave and John. But there's a difference between hosting a TV show and doing a podcast, or, you know, having a Bulls blog. There's certainly a different skill set. And, you know, fortunately, as I got into this second career of sports media, I always kind of knew that I had that in my back pocket, and it might kind of give me an edge that other people in the field don't have.
Your experience on Locked On Bulls, how much has it changed since you've gotten into Bulls Outsiders? Has it helped the downloads increase, the listening increase?
It certainly, I think, has had an impact, because there are people who started watching Bulls Outsiders who didn't know that I had a daily Bulls podcast. But the same is true vice versa. There are some people who were aware that I was one of the hosts of the Locked On Bulls podcast that did, for whatever reason, didn't catch wind of the announcement of Bulls Outsiders being launched by NBC Sports Chicago, and then found Outsiders afterwards. So it's had like a double effect in both directions. And I think the fact that I was doing both this season, certainly it didn't just help Locked On Bulls, but it helped Bulls Outsiders as well, because even before Bulls Outsiders started up, over the, you know, tail end of 2017 and into 2018, joining the Locked On Network, Jordan and I saw like a steady increase of listens, and not just here in Chicago, but across the states, globally even. You know, I'm sure that the Bulls fan base is everywhere internationally because of the Jordan years. And Jordan and I had really started to see a huge uptick in our numbers even before Outsiders started, and then it just kind of snowballed from there.
Isn't it awesome also how you see the increases from Finland? It's the marketing effect. It's great.
Yeah, I think somewhere around like between 7% and 10% of our downloads on average come from Finland, which is crazy when you think about it, because we have a lot of downloads and it's a tiny country. But you know, I mean, he's a megastar over there. I saw recently, I don't know if you saw that, like he's starting to do some marketing, some branding. Like he has his own hot sauce with his face on it in Finland right now.
Oh my God. I mean, that's kind of an interesting thing. I didn't think the Finnish people used hot sauce, but go figure.
Yeah. It doesn't strike you as a hot sauce country, does it?
But no, more of a mayonnaise country.
Right. Exactly.
So before we get into your rebuilding plan, I did want to ask, because you guys at NBC Sports Chicago, they had a draft lottery party, and some of the heavy hitters from Bulls Twitter were there, and of course you three were there. What was the reaction in the room like with the Bulls getting the number 7th pick for the third straight year?
I mean, it was, you know, there's really no way to describe it other than being just all of the energy being sucked out of the room. It was insane. I mean, we had heard that they had, you know, gotten a pretty fair to large number of people who were calling in ahead of time to reserve tables at Public House, and that we weren't sure how big of a turnout there would be. Like as we got closer to the day of the event, it sounded like it might actually be, you know, a pretty highly attended event. And then all of a sudden, even like 2 hours before that lottery itself started, the place was at capacity, and there was a line of people down the block out the door. And I was like, wow, well, clearly this is not for us. This is Bulls fans being really excited about the draft lottery. So
Don't be modest. I mean, it's partially you guys too. I mean, come
well,
on.
You know, and Kendall and Will were there, and Ryan Archidiacono was our guest of honor, and it was so much fun to get to chat with him and you know, be sitting behind the same desk as Archie and asking him some questions about the past season. But I mean, when the deputy commissioner revealed that Bulls logo at pick seven, it was, I mean, like they caught our reaction on camera. I'm pretty sure it was part of the broadcast. I was in between Dave and John and just crushed. I'm pretty sure I spilled part of a beer down Big Dave's sleeve because it was a jerk physical reaction when it happened, because I don't know why I let myself get my hopes up. I don't know why I let myself say, I think we're going to get lucky this time around. Of course we didn't. Of course we didn't. But yeah, it was pretty devastating, and the mood was pretty somber for the rest of the evening.
Part of your rebuilding plan is going to have to be trying to sell us on what you would do with that number seven pick. So this is going to be interesting, Matt. So you're the first guest we're having on post lottery in this theoretical world. You're being given the keys to the Bulls car. If you've been given that job, what's your first order of business as the guy in charge?
Well, this may sound extreme, but if I am given control, I'm assuming that means I have control of everything, including ownership.
Okay. So you want to take the role of Jerry Reinsdorf?
Yeah. I mean, unless you're saying that the power stops at John Paxson, executive vice president, or Michael Reinsdorf, president.
I'm going to give you the role of VP of basketball ops, but I'm really intrigued by what you would do if you were owning the team. So roll with this. I'm fine with that.
Okay. Well, so to me, it's simple. The Reinsdorfs need to sell this team. I've believed that for a while now. If you want real change, it starts at the top, and not just most of the way to the top. I'm talking the peak of Mount Everest, top ownership, you know, granddad Jerry. And that, I mean, this, like, you know, constant pattern of blind loyalty and in some cases nepotism has done this franchise no favors. And we hear all of these different ways that they legitimize the job security and the job performance, and well, they draft well, and if it weren't for the Derek injury, this and that. And there is, you know, how many times do we have to listen to Michael Reinsdorf, who clearly just does not have any friends who know things about basketball, say, well, I talked to other executives around the league, and I talked to Jerry West, and he thinks we're doing a good job. And even in a recent interview, Michael Reinsdorf said that he's hasn't had any other executives tell him that they think he's doing, you know, or the guys he's put in charge are doing a bad job. Why would any executive in the league say that? What? It is a competition. It is a competitive league where executives are trying to outperform their colleagues. So all of these, it starts at the top and moves all the way down. Whether you're talking about the perception and the fact that under the regime of John Paxson, and then after that, Gar Foreman under his wing, I mean, what are the biggest free agents that we have acquired either via free agent signings or trades? Ben Wallace, an aging Pau Gasol, an aging Carlos Boozer, an aging Dwayne Wade and Rajon Rondo. They can't get the star players that they need, and they're insisting on internal development of the players that they are trying to build in-house through the draft. And don't get me wrong, I have high hopes for players like Markkanen, and I really like what I saw from Zach LaVine this season. But until you fix the fact that nobody wants to come here, despite the fact that this team has a rich history and is in the third largest market and is still globally the most recognizable basketball team ever, something is wrong at the top. And to me, it sell the team, and sell the team to somebody that has weight and cachet and a personality that is attractive in the city of Chicago.
Well, you know what? Because Bulls Outsiders mania is running wild right now, Jerry Reinsdorf has decided to sell the team to you, Matt Peck, and now you are the man in charge in that role. It's your dollars.
Awesome.
So what would be your first order of business now that you own the team? And you have taken a stand that nobody else on the show has taken yet, which I love it. Who are you bringing in as the brain trust? You know, the whether that's an executive of basketball operations, GM, where are you looking to?
Well, before you get there, I am bringing in two Chicago celebrities to be a part of my ownership group. Oprah Winfrey, and Barack Obama. You do not do better in Chicago and among the African-American community, which by and large, this is an African-American league. And this is an African-American city as far as sports fans who feel unrepresented. And Chicago, by and large, is if you get Barack Obama and Oprah Winfrey into the ownership group of the Chicago Bulls, how many NBA players all of a sudden want to come play here? That might sound ludicrous to some people listening to this, but I am dead serious about that. For whatever reason, people have sworn off the Reinsdorfs and everybody they hire. How quickly would that change if you brought in two of Chicago's most highly respected, admired, and we want to be around you personalities, like a former president and the most successful black woman in America, arguably the world?
Let me throw this as an aside question. If you were Jerry Reinsdorf, do you ever think that you would consider making like a small move like that to say, I'll bring you in, you know, bring in a guy like Barack Obama as like a 5% ownership in that group? Like, it just seems like a no-brainer. I've heard that pitched out before.
I mean, if I were Reinsdorf, I would consider it. Because, again, the examples of them bringing in people, they're all in-house people. So, yeah, you had Horace Grant representing the team at the lottery on Tuesday night, and that's cool and that's fun. And, you know, Bulls fans think back fondly to Horace Grant. And it's the same role that other people like Scottie Pippen and Tony Kukoc serve as whatever the title is, special advisor to the Reinsdorfs. And, hey, what's the most recent example? And Bulls fans are so confused about what exactly the hell it is he does here. Former coach Doug Collins. It's all in-house classic Bulls stuff. Think outside the box for once, Reinsdorfs, and maybe doing something like that might get the perception around you when it comes to agents who are, you know, by and large, outside of Mark Bartlestein, are not really keen on dealing with the Bulls and the players that they represent.
No, I mean, it's a 100% true statement. You really don't see the Reinsdorf family do anything outside the Bulls' inner circle, really. If that's what you're doing, you're bringing in some cachet to kind of drum up interest in your franchise, then what are the moves that you're making from a basketball operations standpoint? I mean, maybe it's a team you're looking to, or do you have certain people in mind that you might bring in as an executive or GM?
Yeah, that you know, that gets to be a more difficult question as far as, like, do you go with somebody who has a resume as serving as a GM somewhere else, or do you take a swing on somebody new? Personally, I would tend to lean towards somebody who has proven that they can handle managerial duties, at least to some degree. Maybe they're not a VP or a president, but they have some GM experience or assistant GM experience. And I would look in a couple of places. I would look over at the San Antonio Spurs. I would look at the Golden State Warriors. I would look at, honestly, anywhere where there are people who have been put on a list that is outside of the list of the one that the Bulls have, which is like two dudes in Ames, Iowa, and just start there. Because it's a coaching search problem, and it's a front office problem when it comes to these Bulls. And it's, you know, not to reuse the same phrase, but thinking outside the box. More and more franchises, I should say, are giving opportunities, not just in the realm of coaching, but in the realm of management, to former players. And honestly, I think that is not a bad idea. Some people say, well, just because you're a retired NBA player, what makes you think you have the abilities to run a team? A lot of retired NBA players are really smart people. And guess what? As much as it is about negotiating contracts and scouting the right way, by the way, I trust former players to do scouting more so than I trust some guy who's never played the game. So there's that. And also, it all goes back to building relationships, because this is a players-run league. This isn't a coaches league. This isn't a management league. NBA players are more powerful than they have ever been before, and I think that's a good thing. And when you bring in a management choice that is someone who is a well-liked retired NBA veteran who knows what he sees on the court and has positive relationships with players currently in the league, well, all of a sudden, the Bulls' problem with landing big free agents is a lot more manageable, and maybe they become a desired place to play because they know that their boss, not their coach, but their actual boss, management, is somebody they trust because they are a former player themselves.
So I'm going to throw something at you. We've had some guests on our show, two in particular. It was Gary Calzone from the Bully Pulpit podcast and Derek Briscoe from the Chicago Hot Sauce podcast and Chicago Sports Nation. They both threw out the name as sort of a pseudo face. They threw out the name Scottie Pippen as their GMs, and I kind of raised an eyebrow because I've heard him on The Jump, and he scares the living shit out of me. I don't know if you would go to in that kind of a direction, but when you say former player, are you looking at somebody that maybe is a little more analytical in their approach?
Yeah, I certainly would think so. I'm not a fan of the Scotty idea because to me, again, that goes back to, for the love of God, Bulls, can you do something that is not Bulls? I love Scotty. And you know, it's nice that he has the role that he does within the organization as a special advisor and a guy who shows up to events and you know, has great relationship with the fans and does charity work and all that. Personally, based on what I have heard Scotty talk about in terms of how he sees the league these days, he's not somebody that I would put at the top of my list. But you know, a guy who just took a job at the collegiate level, Jerry Stackhouse, is a name that, you know, I think interests a lot of people. I think a lot of people, and I know my buddy Big Dave is really big on this, and was interested in this guy to be the Bulls coach, but I think he could one day be a guy who is a great management level guy in this league, and that's Juwan Howard. Like, there are names of people who are former players that see where the league is going better than those who are kind of stuck in the old days. Like when you listen to Chuck talk on NBA on TNT and you're like, oh, this guy still doesn't get it. You know, like there are some retired players who have been paying attention to how the league is trending. And just start there. Start with some interviews of those players who appreciate what the league has morphed into, understand it, and have solid relationships with the players who are the league's brightest stars right now and go from there. And preferably have that person not be someone who was in any way in the past related to this organization.
Okay, so we're going outside the box. You know, one of the guys that I really like now, and he does get a lot of consideration for GM jobs, is Chauncey Billups. I'm a huge fan of him. I think if you listen to him on ESPN, he's definitely a guy that sees the growing trends going on in the league. And you could tell he's been studying and trying to get that crack at the next big opening.
Yeah, I mean that's certainly another name. I was going to throw his name out there as well. Honestly, I would prefer that than watching Chauncey on TV because I think I agree with you. He's got a great basketball mind. One of the more respected guys in the league, was a part of that amazing Pistons team that, you know, nobody thought was going to beat the Lakers in 2004. One of, you know, my, as far as championships that don't involve the Bulls winning, as a NBA fan in general, I loved watching that Pistons team win, and I got a lot of respect for Chauncey Billups. And I also think that he's kind of a boring guy to watch on TV. So put that guy in office. Absolutely. You know, but again, and I'm not saying it has to be a retired player. There are plenty of people who are quality candidates when you look around. Like Brian Wright is one I think of. I mentioned the Spurs earlier. He's a guy in line, and I think he's going to get an opportunity pretty soon. Trajan Langdon, Brooklyn Nets, Tommy Shepard of the Wizards. You know, like there are those people who were up-and-comers. Of course, you know, David Griffin just took a new job. I thought, you know, he got a really raw deal, and I think he's really good at his job. But I just, like, if you have the choice and you truly believe that, you know, there's a retired player who knows the game and can work with what the NBA is morphing into, that also can have that added bonus of developing these strong, trusted relationships with the players, it's such a better environment for everyone involved.
One other thing that you'd have to face the music on is you, Oprah, and Obama. You're going to have to sit and determine if... what you're going to do with your coach, because you have 3 years left on Jim Boylan's deal now that he's been re-upped and you now are inheriting that.
And I have to stick with that?
Well, it's going to be your call. Are you sticking with, you know, maybe at least a season or two or the full 3 years, or are you just going to say, you know what, Jim, here's a check, go away and find the next guy?
I mean, that now, so okay, so assuming that what has happened has happened and I can't change that, and Jim Boylan is currently under a 3-year deal, I don't necessarily buy into all that much, all of the ways in which John Paxson is in love with Jim Boylan and the preparing the children for the road nonsense, because this is a very young team. It was the youngest team in the league last year. So, you know, I'll give him that. These are young players with limited NBA experience, and maybe they needed to, you know, get their butts kicked a little bit by a coach who was way less of a pushover than Fred Hoiberg was, which is why I was never a fan of the Hoiberg firing or hiring in the first place. But I'll give Jim Boylan, just for the sake of continuity of some kind, because this past season was so disjointed and continuously interrupted, which is, I think, one of the reasons it went so poorly. For continuity's sake, I'll give Jim Boylan next season and see what he does. And maybe the Bulls, if they stay healthy and they add a piece or two in free agency, make some kind of marked improvement. And even if they say they win 33 games instead of 22, which I think is a realistic and still kind of optimistic projection for next year, assuming healthy. I don't know right now. I don't have a crystal ball to say how much credit Jim Boylan should get for that. What I do know is what I know about Boylan right now, which is that he and his breed, there's a reason that not many of them are left in the NBA. There are a lot of similarities between Jim Boylan and Tom Thibodeau. And guess what? Tibbs crashed and burned in Minnesota. And I think that you have to think about the people who appreciate the analytics of where this game has gone. I think that's one of the old dog things that this current regime is stuck in. Oh, it's all about grit and spirit. It's like John Paxson's trying to remake the gritty baby Bulls of the early aughts. Like, yeah, well, let's get a young Kirk Heinrich and Luol Deng and Andres Nocioni out there. We're gonna hold our opponents to 75 points a night, and we're gonna battle in the paint. Okay, no, that's not how the NBA works anymore. Though, so I'm in control, I'll give Jim Boylan next year to have another year of molding the young minds, or, you know, showing these young players how to be disciplined NBA players, how to take care of your body, how to be a responsible adult in the NBA. I'll give him 1 year of that, and then I'm conducting a thorough coaching search of who all is out there with NBA coaching experience who believes in the modern analytics of today's NBA.
Now, are there any other changes you're making within your organizational structure? Are you tweaking the scouting department a bit? Are you trying to change the sports medicine and medical staff? What are some other things that you might be trying to tweak a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Well, first off, Gar, thanks, buddy. Thanks for your service. Goodbye. We'll find some younger scouts that have a net that reaches wider than the cornfields of Iowa.
And New Mexico.
Okay, sure. Yeah, if you want to throw that in there too. It's two nets. One is specifically aimed at Iowa, and the other one is a little bit further of a net that reaches to New Mexico. But as far as the medical staff, the strength and conditioning staff, absolutely. You know, Jordan and I get that question all the time on Locked On Bulls from people saying, like, what, why, how? And Paxson said it again in his season-ending press conference. He got a question about the injuries because, guess what, they love to use the injuries as an excuse. And I like his answer was so glaring and almost offensive to me, in that he absolved any and all responsibility from his coaching staff, his strength and conditioning staff, and essentially put all of the onus on the players themselves. I'm not sure if you remember that part of Paxson's comments, Matt, but he said, we want our players to take advantage of all of the great, you know, medical staff and the, you know, the training equipment that we have and our amazing facilities. They also love to brag about how much money they spend on the Advocate Center. And, oh my gosh, look how great we are. People say we're cheap. We're not cheap. Look at the Advocate Center. And it was like he was holding the players responsible, because he was in some way insinuating that they weren't doing everything in their power to keep themselves in good shape and keep themselves healthy. And I'm sorry, to me, like, what, really? Where did that come from? Because your team has a history of injury after injury after injury under this regime with the same people at the helm. You know, Tanaka's been around forever. They recently re-brought back Chip Schaefer, from the glory days of the 90s, there's another example of the Bulls never thinking outside the box. And it doesn't, it's not like the same players keep getting hurt. Different players, there's been insane roster turnover with this organization over the last 3 or 4 years. And every single season, injuries have been an issue. How do you not address that? If I'm in control, clean house with the strength and conditioning staff, with the medical staff, and find the best people available.
So before we get into the dreaded number 7 pick and the draft, I do want to ask you quick questions about the core. When we look at the core, I think the foundational pieces that Bulls fans look to are Lauri Markkanen, Zach LaVine, and Wendell Carter Jr. What are your thoughts on those three going forward in your vision?
So LaVine, Markkanen, and Carter. I really liked what we saw from Wendell in his rookie season, and it's a real shame that his rookie season got cut short. I think he obviously, as many rookies are wont to do, battled with foul trouble early and often, and it didn't help that he was one of the few people on this roster this past season who was actively trying to play defense on a regular basis. So he ended up trying to bail out, playing help defense, coming over from the weak side to contest and try and protect the rim, and ended up getting in a lot of foul trouble because of it. So I'm not putting all of that on him, although some of it will be as he continues to build his experience and his basketball IQ, which I think as far as an 18-year-old rookie coming to the league was already pretty darn high. It's just figuring out the ways to avoid that foul trouble. We certainly saw glimpses of his offensive potential in a handful of games. You know, our final Outsiders episode, we were picking our favorite moments of the season, and mine was Wendell's coming out party. It was a game against the Denver Nuggets, which were at the time the hottest team in the league. This, I want to say, it was like late October, early November. And, you know, Wendell put up like a 28-8-8 or like a 28-8-5 game where he knocked down a couple of threes. He was showing us his abilities to score from the block. He was grabbing rebounds. He was showing that he is an underrated passer as a center. And, you know, honestly, with all the lack of facilitator problems this roster has had, that's the hope, is that Wendell can turn into a dominant passing center like the way you see Jokic play for the Nuggets, the way you see Al Horford play for the Celtics, and before that with the Atlanta Hawks, the way you saw like point center Joakim play in that year where he was not only the defensive player of the year but averaging, you know, like 7 or 8 assists a game with the Derrick Rose-less Bulls. I think Wendell has that potential on the offensive end, not just to be a guy who can score, but a guy who can facilitate.
Do you think that his ceiling, and the name you hear a lot, do you think it's like an Al Horford type?
I think it can be. Obviously, you didn't really see Al Horford expand his offensive range until the latter stages of his season. And now, on those nights when Al Horford was knocking down those pick-and-pop threes, that Celtics offense was virtually unstoppable. So, but again, that's something that Horford didn't develop until later. It's the same thing with Brook Lopez. You know, we joked about the few times we saw Rolo launch a three this season, but Brook Lopez became one of the deadliest three-point shooters in the league after he had been like a 10-year veteran. So, you know, I think the Bulls fans who didn't see Wendell shoot a lot of threes and make a lot of threes this season, it's like, he's an 18-year-old rookie. Give it time. I think he can develop that aspect to his game. But overall, you have to be pleased with the way that Wendell showed us just how many different ways he could be effective on the floor.
So what about Zach LaVine, though? Where do you think his ceiling could be with this Bulls team?
I think Zach has, if you look at his numbers from this season, they're borderline all-star numbers if he were on a team that didn't win 22 games. I know there are a lot of people who say that they don't trust his basketball IQ. He's got tunnel vision. You know, he's not a net positive player. This season was the first time he actually had a net positive rating in his NBA career. Everybody's quick to point that out. But, I mean, when you talk about the quality and caliber of the player that we saw LaVine be this year, his first fully healthy year coming off of a third of a season off a torn ACL, it was kind of remarkable to every once in a while when you saw LaVine attacking the rim ferociously or, you know, crossing guys up on the offensive end, hitting these difficult shots. You had to remind yourself sometimes that this was a dude who tore his ACL a year and a half ago, because that's how fresh and how athletic he looked. And yeah, there are elements to his game that could be better. People suggesting LaVine just making him our point guard because we don't have a point guard answer and we probably won't find an ideal one this offseason. I still think he's best served as a two in today's NBA. But when you think about the fact that Bulls fans were on the fence and a lot of them were very loudly negative about the fact that they matched that offer from the Kings last summer, and people thought that the Bulls, even despite LaVine being at the time the primary piece of the Jimmy Butler trade when you traded away an all-NBA caliber player, people thought that they should let him walk. And honestly, Jordan and I both believed at the time that matching it was the right move, but I certainly, Jordan was always a big believer in LaVine's abilities. I was a bit more hesitant and skeptical, but I said, you can't let him walk for nothing. You can't. You got to match it. Think about that now, and the fact that the Bulls have a 25 points per game scorer on a contract less than $20 million. How many players in the NBA are in that situation right now, and LaVine's under that in that same situation for three more years? Like, it's overall a pretty good thing for the Bulls that LaVine is on this roster.
Now, and I agree with you. You know, I sort of was in the same camp as you, where I was sort of skeptical. Like, I knew they had to match the deal just because he was a cornerstone piece of that trade. But he definitely won me over as this season went on. Of course, another piece from that trade, Lauri Markkanen. You know, there's a lot of, I think, debate amongst Bulls Nation on where he falls in terms of where his ceiling can be. You know, you hear he could be the next Dirk Nowitzki. I think that's what John Sabine brought up in
right.
our podcast with him. But, you know, I look at him as maybe top 20, top 30. And that's not bad. It's still an all-star. Where do you fall on that with Lauri Markkanen?
I think he certainly has all-star potential. I think I would go as far to say as I also think he has all-NBA team potential. Do I think he can be the best player on a team contending for a championship, like a team that is getting to conference finals regularly and going to the finals in his prime? I can't say that I confidently believe that he can be that good. But I will say that I am way more optimistic than pessimistic when it comes to Lowry and just how high his ceiling might be because of some of the games that we have seen from him. I know people say it's a small sample size, the schedule was weak, whatever, whatever. But at 21, 22 years of age, in the month of February, he was averaging 26 and 12. Not that many people do that at that young of an age in just your second season. After even not really even playing a full rookie season, there are so many ways that Markkanen can expand his offensive game. And we even kind of, you know, everybody, he would occasionally do that Dirk shot, but he's kind of developed his own signature move towards the back end of last season where he does that kind of drag step. It's not a Euro step, but it's a drag step where he's driving left and he was hitting that regularity and he was going glass. And also just one of the purest strokes of a shooter that we saw in the league this year. You know, he did have a bit of a shooting slump in the season, but, you know, shooters always shoot their way out of those slumps. And to me, it is a question of, does Markkanen decide that he is the best player on the team, and does he demand the respect of being the best player on the team when it comes to getting the ball and getting the shots? Because there were plenty of nights where we would look at the box score at the end of a game before going on Outsiders and being like, Lowry took 8 shots tonight? Like, 8? He's got to take more than that. So to me, the question is not what is the limit to his ability as a basketball player. It is, will he decide to be the cold-blooded killer that Dirk Nowitzki was and so few people that come through this league are and are destined to be?
So after those three guys in the core, there is one guy that's kind of I don't know. I think he's kind of on the fringe. It was acquired at the trade deadline, Otto Porter. He's got 2 years left on his contract. Where do you see him in your long-term vision? Is this just really, in your mind, a stopgap for the next 2 years or somebody you look to shop at some point? Or is this somebody that you think could potentially be part of your future?
I mean, I think he's a stopgap. I think he's going to be a great stopgap. You know, I was mentioning how well Lowry played in the month of February. There's not, you know, it's to me not a coincidence that some of Lowry's best games came after Otto arrived in that trade. And not just Lowry, but the Bulls as a whole were playing some of their best team basketball because Otto filled a need that was, you know, desperately lacking on this roster, you know, a reliable 3-and-D wing. with Chandler Hutchinson being a rookie, Denzel being on the shelf all season, and basically nothing beyond that. They filled that, and you know, my apologies to Justin Holliday, but man, was I glad to see him go. You know, Otto is a guy who can knock down threes and can guard multiple positions, and he's a well-respected vet in the locker room and all that stuff. But like, you just saw his basketball IQ on the floor, whether it was taking an open shot or making the smartest pass and just playing good basketball. So in that sense, and the fact that it came at a position that was in such need of help, I think I was a big fan of the trade, also because, you know, I was ready to see Jabari go before he even arrived. That was a terrible idea. And Bobby, bless his heart, you know, he's a guy that did an event with Jordan and I last summer, a guy I really like. I think a guy that got a bad rap for one bad, ugly moment with a teammate, you know, a couple years ago. But the Bulls should be thanking their lucky stars that he turned down that contract offer they gave him last year, because he is not worth that money. So the fact that those are the pieces they shipped away and they got Otto in return, he's a great stopgap. Which is why I think when it comes to some of the other things that the Bulls might look to do this season, if they want to add more veterans to help fill out the bench, add another leader in the locker room, especially if Rolo's on his way out of town, then make that a two-year deal, if at all possible, so that their money comes off the books at the same time Otto's does. Because I'm not like super high on Chandler Hutchinson. I liked the certain glimpses of him that we saw this season as a guy who can rebound, who can play in a faster pace, make plays in transition. And I don't have any faith in Denzel Valentine and his broken body. But, you know, maybe the Bulls do end up adding a wing in this draft. Maybe Culver falls. Maybe Hunter falls. You know, maybe they take a chance on Cam Reddish. But beyond that, you know, hopefully something develops with one of those younger wings, because I don't see the Bulls signing Otto to a new contract when those 2 years are up.
Because now you own the Bulls, you don't see that happening either. So of course you build your core through the draft. And this year, as we've mentioned a few times, you've been blessed with the number 7 pick.
I feel like cursed is a better word, but go on.
I'm trying to stay optimistic, okay? What are you doing with that? Are you right now, are you keeping it? Are you trading up, down, using it in a trade for a player? What are you doing with that pick?
Yeah, I mean, of course, as soon as the Bulls fell to 7, everybody started talking about possible trade scenarios. And even John Paxson himself, it seems, in his recent comments to the media after lottery night events unfolded, is making it seem like they're open to the idea of trading that pick if they don't love anybody on their board. So, you know, I hope that the Bulls keep the phone lines open. If I'm running this team, I absolutely am making calls to see what I might be able to do. But am I knocking down the Lakers' door to get Lonzo Ball in a trade? No. You know, and Jordan and I hear tons of that on the podcast hotline. No, I'm not doing that. Would I sacrifice, you know, the entire family to trade up to 2 to take John Morant because this team so desperately needs a point guard? I mean, I'm calling and I'm making some offers. And you know, don't kill the messenger here, because I'm like the messenger of myself now that I'm running the team. I might, if I thought it would get something done, mention Wendell in trade offers, as young as he is with as much potential as he has. I might, if the situation calls for it, offer Zach LaVine. In no scenarios am I offering Lauri Markkanen to trade up in this draft.
Let me throw something out at you, because this was a scenario that I threw to one of my friends, actually, right after the lottery unfolded. If you were moving up to, let's say, the Memphis spot, number 2, and your sights are set on John Morant, and Memphis says, you know what, we'll give you the number 2 pick, but you have to take on the contract of Chandler Parsons, and we'll take your number 7 pick and Zach LaVine. Would you do it?
Okay, so the number 2 pick and Chandler Parsons' contract for the number 7 pick and Zach LaVine.
Yes, but and now the good thing is you're not giving up any type of future draft equity. It's just literally player for player, pick for pick.
Oh, man. Man, that is a good hypothetical question. I mean, the Parsons contract is one of the longest running jokes in the NBA over the last few years. It's only got one more year on it. You know, he's due $25 million next year, and then you're done. Oh, man. You know what? I think I might do that. If it means getting Ja Morant to pair with Markkanen and Wendell, I think I might do that. I like Zach LaVine, but you need a dominant point guard in today's NBA to win. You just do. I would pull the trigger on that.
I brought this other proposal up, and it was without giving up Zach LaVine. I had pitched the idea on Twitter of trading number 7 and Otto Porter for Chandler Parsons and number 2. And the first response I got was delete your account. And I thought, I think it's funny because Ja Morant, again, the point guard position is vital in the NBA. And I just don't understand why that wouldn't be a no-brainer move. But it's interesting because you're saying, like, even with the Zach LaVine idea, I mean, that's a player of a lot more substance than Otto Porter.
Absolutely. He's a proven 20 points per game scorer, which, you know, we all believe that Ja Morant has star potential in this league. And he was not only one of the most, you know, dominant flashy scorers in the league, but also arguably has, you know, he already, we know, has like 10x the court vision and basketball IQ that Zach LaVine has. And, you know, I say we know, I would say that's my opinion, but like, he was not only one of the best scoring point guards in the league, he was the best passing point guard in the league. And man, does this Bulls team need that. They need that more than they need Zach LaVine, if I'm being honest.
You know, you still have Lauri Markkanen. You still have, you know, Otto Porter. You still have Wendell Carter Jr.
Right.
And you still have some pieces that you can build with, and you're getting Ja Morant.
Right. And do you know what's easier to find and easier to come by than a versatile, dynamic, dominant point guard who can control the game in so many ways? Competent shooting guards.
Absolutely.
They're all over the place. And no offense to Zach, and not to only just label him as a competent shooting guard, but if I can have one of those things entrenched in my core moving forward early on in a rebuild, give me a young point guard that can dominate and control the game before you give me a shooting guard who can score 22 points a night.
I'm going to give you one other hypothetical of a trade here. Let's say the New Orleans Pelicans, for some reason, David Griffin's really drunk and he calls you and says, hey, I really like Lauri Markkanen, like, love him a lot. You know, I'll take Lauri, Wendell Carter Jr., and your number 7 pick, and I'll give you this number 1 pick because I'm crazy. I mean, would you ever consider that, knowing you get Zion Williamson?
Oh, okay. So this is a Zion hypothetical, not an AD hypothetical.
This is a Zion hypothetical.
Okay. You surprised me with the final part of that sentence. I thought we were going to AD town, which, by the way, for the record, my answer there would be hell no with AD. I'm not touching that. With Zion, so I have to give up Lowry and Wendell and number 7 pick for the number 1. Ooh, wow, that is that's a lot to give up. No, I'm not doing it.
Really?
Really, I'm really truly I'm not doing it. As much as I, you know, see now, you know, wearing the shoes and the hat of the owner, I'm thinking about how much that would reinvigorate the fan base. And you put Zion in the United Center and all of a sudden that place is packed out again. Not just, oh, the Bulls came in second in NBA attendance, but actually this year, if you notice, as far as capacity, they dropped to like 17th. As a businessman, and you know, that's the part that I never like to think about because I just like to complain about how the people who run the team that I want to win are more, you know, more concerned with the business side than the actual winning basketball games side. I know that Zion has more star power already than Wendell or Markkanen have. I know that. Basketball is my chief concern, and winning basketball is my chief concern. I so want Zion to be a big star in this league. I want him less to be a big star in this league now that he's not coming to us. But I do think that there is a little bit of bust potential in him. Not that he won't be a big star, but that maybe there's an injury in his future. Maybe that once his freakish athleticism is no longer in the, I am in my early, you know, I'm in my late teens, early 20s, because so much of Zion's game and so much of what makes him dominant is his freak athleticism. When that goes away, I don't know if he's going to be a, you know, 15, 20, 20-year star in this league. And I think that Markkanen, even as a player into his 30s, if he develops his game the right way, can be one of those kinds of stars. So for that reason, I'm going to say no, I won't make that trade.
Thank you for listening to the Rebuildable Podcast. Be sure to check out more episodes on Google Play, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and on Rebuildable.com.